Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here today with Mandy Tolino, who is general manager of Tolino Vineyards. It's a family-owned and operated vineyard and winery established in 2007, just south of Bangor, up in the Slate Belt area of Northampton County. Mandy, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Oh, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for being here. I was reading a little bit about the Tolino history, and I learned that it was actually you who came up with the idea of a vineyard on the property. So I'm wondering how all that came together and how the land was acquired and the steps it took to move to becoming a vineyard.
Sure. So, yeah, they all like to blame me for the idea of starting this thing. So
I was thinking credit, not blame.
Oh, okay. Well, either which way, it started because I had a degree in agriculture, so I had just graduated, and I had grapes in my brain, and I was thinking, where could I plant grapes? And my dad had acquired this farm. He moved, and it's about 87 acres there, and he was looking for suggestions on what could be planted. So I said, why don't you try planting grapes? And we were planning on originally selling them to other wineries, but we realized quickly that 10 acres of grapes is much, much better to be used to make your own wine to resell it, the actual wine, instead of wholesaling the grapes. So that's kind of how we got started. And from there, it's just been every year, it's been something new. We've been adding stores and making different wines. So we've been moving pretty quickly since we opened, which is awesome.
So Mandy, what was it about the property that kind of drew your eye to wanting to grow grapes there? Was there something special about the way it was positioned or the topography of it?
Yeah, so it is a south-facing hill, so it gets a lot of sun, and the drainage in this region is relatively poor. So when we were digging holes to plant some trees, I realized there was a lot of rock and shale, which improved some of the drainage. So that was sort of in the back of my mind that, it was better drained than a lot of the other areas on the farm. So it was perfect for planting grapes. Enough sun, a little bit better drainage than some other areas. So it was a really great spot for the grapes, and they're doing well so far, which is really good.
So probably better for planting grapes than it would be for other crops.
Yeah, absolutely, because you're not using equipment as well to harvest. So, we're doing everything by hand. So the hill isn't as much of an issue as if you're using some heavy machinery to, say, plant corn or soybeans, like traditional crops. So that actually is a little bit better for grapes.
And how about the soil itself there? What do you find about the soil that's either conducive to grape growing, or at least unique to that area of Northampton County?
So the soil does have a lot of clay in it, but the rock and shale adds a lot of drainage. So that is pretty unique to Bangor and the Slate Belt. So that addition of the shale is what helps the grapes grow better in Bangor and in Lehigh Valley.
Now, is my lack of geology knowledge, but if I remember talking to someone up in that area before saying that they said the terminal moraine, or the last of the glaciers extended just either beyond Blue Mountain or maybe a little bit north of it. Are you kind of in that terminal moraine area where there were glacial deposits?
Yeah, definitely. I think that would be an accurate statement.
And then how does one go about actually starting a vineyard where you have this canvas of land of many, many acres? And how do you start building it, I guess, literally from the ground up?
So first, what you want to do is a lot of planning in advance for, like, soil testing. So you can go to your county extension office and get soil tests done. So that'll tell you exactly what's in your soil. And that'll be your first step to see if you can even plant grapes there, if they'll grow. And I mean, grapes will grow anywhere. It's just that, are they going to grow well? Because you're a commercial operation, so you want to make sure that the grapes are going to produce enough for it to make sense to invest in the planting and all the trellis and things that go along with it. So first you start with soil tests. And after that, you are going to have to order all your like hard goods, the hard materials. So it's the trellis. And then we ordered our little grapevines. They look like sticks from New York. That's where they came from. So that's how we started. And we used a laser planter, which allowed them to be planted very accurately in rows. So that way the spacing is very standard and allows for better airflow. So there's a lot of planning to go in advance before you even get to the point of putting the vines in the ground. And also we contacted a lot of local professionals and asked them what sorts of varieties of grapes grow well in this region. So in California or somewhere where it's really hot and dry and the soil's well-drained, you can pretty much plant anything and it will grow pretty well. Here you just have to do a lot more homework to find out what actually will grow well in this region.
And when you have a vineyard, are there ways that you parcel out the different types of grapes and how you position them? I'm thinking of like a vegetable garden or a perennial garden, there are certain things that that you might put next to each other or put a little farther away. Is that an issue in a vineyard?
No, I would say the biggest issue that we come across now is drift from herbicides, from farms. That's the one thing that you want to try to, you know, keep the grapes away from farmers that are spraying for pests. And also the other issue is the spotted lantern fly. So those are our main concerns. As for planning out where you plant the different varieties, it's just, you know, obviously better to keep the same variety in the same region just for harvesting purposes.
Right.
Because the grapes will ripen at the same time. But otherwise, not really. You can plant many things next to grapes. And also you have to watch out for certain types of fungus, so you wouldn't want to plant a plant that would attract fungus. But I can't even think of one off the top of my head right now that would be, you know, like something that you wouldn't want to plant.
And if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about, I don't want to say our friend, our nemesis, the spotted lantern fly, and what effect it's been having on vineyards here in PA and elsewhere.
Yeah, so this year we've been pretty lucky. This year is the first year that we really had to address it. In previous years, we've had a few here and there, but when they say when you see one, there's more coming. So basically what you do is you can either mechanically remove them, so you just pick them off, and that's what we did during harvest because you want to make sure they're not on the grapes before they go into the press. But as well, you have to just treat them with an insecticide, and it's just not something we like to do, so we try to limit it as much as possible, but they are definitely a major pest, and they cause problems over time. So this year, they were there, and you could see some of the sap on the woody parts of the plant.
Right.
And next year, it will be even worse. So it's like you really just have to keep on top of it to try to keep the populations down. And they travel from cars, so we have guests coming to the winery, and it's hard to manage that way. So you just have to really just keep your eye out for them and keep spraying for them and, you know, mechanically removing them from the plants when you can.
And to your knowledge, how have other Pennsylvania vineyards been managing through it? I know, you know, some down in Berks County maybe have been impacted for longer than you.
To my knowledge, I believe it's mostly just using insecticides, as far as I know. There's been some research done with doing a more natural way to control them, like disrupting their reproductive cycle. But so far that hasn't been released commercially. So we're hopeful that, you know, we can move away from some of the sprays and get something that's a little more friendly to our workers. And
right, certainly. And, so, you know, we know that the spotted lantern fly, you know, is invasive from Asia, but you know, certainly it's a natural being. And just kind of wanted to get your feedback on what it's like to work with Mother Nature. You know, you're unpredictable in terms of temperature, sunshine, rainfall, and so much more. So how do you kind of reconcile that in your mind as a family of winemakers?
Yeah, so I love working outside in nature. I used to be an arborist, so planting things and tending to them and tracking the weather and things like that is really interesting to me. We also have a vineyard manager who is really, really knowledgeable about grapes and the fluctuations in temperatures because, you know, in the past few years, we've had a really significant temperature fluctuations in spring and fall. So he's been able to kind of work around some of those challenges. So, I mean, it's just really interesting. It's great to be out in the vineyard and see how the plants react to some of these changes that are happening in, with the climate. But so far, we've been able to grow some really nice grapes, even with some of those challenges.
And Mandy, before I forget, give me an idea of who else in the family is involved with the vineyard.
My dad is the owner, but he isn't involved in the day-to-day operations anymore. So it's me and my siblings that run the business. So my brother Carl is the winemaker. My sister Liz, she's the tasting room manager, and she does events as well. And then I have another brother, Mark, who helps with winemaking, and he also runs our Easton location. We have one other full-time person, Paul. He's our vineyard manager. And then we have a lot of part-time people helping us out in our tasting rooms.
Oh, great. Mandy, you mentioned getting your initial grapes from, or your initial vines from the New York area, but I wanted to get maybe more specific about which grapes grow well here in PA, first from maybe a white standpoint and then a red standpoint. I'll have you start with white, and then we're probably going to need to take a little break. So can you give us some specifics?
Sure. So the white wine grapes that grow well in this region, the one that grows the best for us is Vidal Blanc. That is a hybrid variety, and we use that grape in a lot of our different wines for blending. We make straight Vidal Blanc, but we also use it for blending Lily, which is one of our more popular wines. It's just a really vigorous grape, and it grows really nicely. And the grapes are really large, and they perform great year after year. So I would say that's a really nice grape for this region, and a lot of local vineyards grow that.
Great, Mandy. Thanks for that. We were going to take a short break. We're going to talk about some red wine and get a little more specific about winemaking when we return. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
Connect with WDIY with our new app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Hi, I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and welcome back to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. Our guest today is Mandy Tolino, who is with Tolino Vineyards, just south of Bangor up in the Slate Belt. We were talking about different grapes that grow well here in Pennsylvania, and Mandy was going to talk about some of the reds that do well here in the region.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. So the reds that we grow are Cabernet Franc and Chambersin. Those two are very different grape varieties. The Cabernet Franc is going to be your traditional type of grape, and the Chambersin is going to be a hybrid. So the hybrids always grow a little bit better in the region, but things like Cabernet Franc, the extra effort to produce the grapes is worth it in the end because you get a little bit higher quality of grape. So those would be the two that I say grow really well in this region for reds.
Now, Mandy, are there grapes that really don't grow too well in this region? Like you said, grapes can pretty much grow anywhere, but some perform better than others based on climate and soil.
I would say that the issue here in this region is going to be the really cold winters. So you have to pick varieties that are going to tolerate the cold over winter. So you get a lot of winter damage to the main plant, and that's going to affect your harvest for the next year. So something like a Pinot Noir might be a little more difficult to grow here, but there is a list that's pretty long of ones that specifically will not grow, and they will just not make it through the winter. So you have to plant more cold-tolerant varieties of grapes.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have that thing called winter here, unlike other places around the country.
I know.
Right? So let's talk more specifically about what goes into winemaking itself. You know, certainly people know about the grapes and the yeast that's used to ferment. Are there other things that go into making a consistent wine, either in terms of ingredients or techniques that we might not consider?
I would say that, you know, the different yeasts that you use are going to affect the end result of the wine. So you want to pick yeasts that are similar each year in order to get the same type of end product. But the main thing is going to be the acid and sugar balance. So we have a wine lab where you test the amount of acids and the amount of sugar in the wine, and that's going to really affect the flavor profile the most. So I would say year to year, you just want to kind of match the acid and sugar, and you're going to get a wine that's somewhat similar. But we don't really want to have a wine that's exactly the same each year, because depending on the harvest, you want to create a wine that is going to be well-balanced. So some years, you're going to have to make some changes in order to really bring out the flavor of the grapes, because that's the most important part of the wine. We grow them in our vineyard, and we want to highlight, you know, the flavors of the grapes. And some years, you know, the acids are going to be lower because we didn't have enough heat and sun near the end of the season. So just different decisions like that are going to affect your wine.
So really, it's less about trying to make it consistent from year to year rather than trying to find the best expression of what Mother Nature and the grapes give you from year to year.
Exactly, yes. You want to definitely focus on the grapes and just make choices based upon the weather and how the grapes are tasting at the end, you know, right before harvest. So the hotter and sunnier it is, which is like, you know, the typical kind of California weather, you're going to accumulate more sugars. So the grapes are going to ripen. You're going to have a lot of sugars in those grapes. And as the sugar increases, your acids are going to decrease a little bit. So, you know, that's the balance that you want to try to strike.
And Mandy, if I had to ask you and other winemakers here in Pennsylvania for the perfect year, starting in January and ending in September or October or so, what would that year look like?
I would say that the perfect year is going to be a winter that's cold, but consistently cold. So you're not getting those 70-degree days in March. And then by the time May comes around, you're going to get warmer, you're going to have bud break, and that's going to be consistently hot and dry throughout summer. So hot, dry summers and fall, and just a consistently cold winter is going to be the perfect scenario for the grapes.
And Mandy, what are your, your most popular wines there, or the ones that you make the most out of, or maybe the ones that you would give the highest acclaim to?
So the most popular wine, I would say, is Lily, which is a white blend of our Vidal and Pinot Grigio. And it's a really nice, easy drinking wine, and it's just has a touch of sweetness. Our highest acclaimed wine is going to be our Cabernet Franc, which is a really bold, dry red, and it has won the most awards. But we really have something for everybody, so we started out making mostly traditional style wines of bold and dry. And as we grew, we added different things that were semi-sweet and sweet as well. But if I had to pick, I would say that Lily is our most popular, and Cabernet Franc is our most awarded of our wines.
And let's talk a little bit about your location there, just south of Bangor, about what people experience when they drive up or walk in the door. I know you have a couple different locations inside and perhaps even some things outside, right?
Yeah, so as you drive to the winery, you're going to be driving up a hill, and you'll be able to look at the vineyard on your left. And as you pull into our parking lot, we have, what's pretty cool is we do tours every weekend too. So in addition to our tasting room where you can enjoy wine, we have our tank room where we give tours, so you can actually see the tanks and the production facilities. We give tours of the vineyard as well, so you can, you know, just get really learn a lot about the process and also see the vines. We have a lot of outdoor seating as well. So in the summers, and especially this year, which was a challenging year, we had a lot of outdoor events, which was great. We have a beautiful view. We have a big grassy area. So it's a really beautiful place, very relaxing to just kind of hang out, listen to some music, and enjoy some great wine.
How have Pennsylvania wines kind of developed maybe over the last 10 or 20 years in terms of quality and reputation? And also, to what extent has the our region's AVA designation kind of helped with that?
Yeah, so we're kind of young, so we are newer to the game. But, you know, just talking to some other wineries locally that have been around a long time, like Franklin Hill and Clover Hill, I think the thing that has happened is people have learned a little bit more about how to make wines that are, you know, the more traditional varieties, the dry, bold wines that a lot of times people think of Pennsylvania as only sweet, which sweet is great too. It's not that one is better or worse, but it's just having more of a selection. So the people that like that dry, traditional type of wine have that option as well. Whereas in the past, I think a lot of the focus was on sweet wine because that was the expectation. But people are learning more. There's been more support from Penn State and different places and the PWA, which is Pennsylvania Wine Association, for trainings and how to just, you know, learn the techniques to make really different types of wine. So yeah, I think it's growing. I think it's great. I think there's something for everybody. I mean, we make wine slushies, which are really tasty, and those are really popular in the last year. And it's just, I don't know, it's the craft beverage industry is really strong, and people are interested in it, and it's fun because you can make a lot of different things for people to try.
Is it drawing people into the area? Like, do you see guests coming in from Jersey, New York, other places in the country?
Absolutely. We're very close to New Jersey, so we see a lot of people from New York and New Jersey just doing it as a long weekend, stopping at different wineries. And there's been more and more wineries opening in the last decade, so it's really good for the draw of people because they can come and visit maybe a brewery or two and then a couple wineries and make a weekend of it. So there's a lot of options for people that want to, you know, visit from out of state or make a long weekend.
And certainly something my wife and I do, whether it's breweries or wineries, but in your opinion, is there something special about going to a winery that helps you understand a region a little bit better in terms of either the people or the land compared to maybe some other attractions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of the wineries are family run as well, so you just get that personal touch, and a lot of the families have been in this region for generations, so you can learn a lot about how it was maybe 25 years ago and to see how things have changed. And also you get that one-on-one experience. A lot of times the owners are there on the weekends, so you can find out a lot about the region and just, you know, see how things started and get the history of the companies. And I think it's a really fun thing to do because not only do you get to learn something and you're learning a little bit about agriculture, a little bit about science, but it's also fun. Everybody likes to drink wine and listen to music. So I think it's great. It's a great way to learn about the Slate Belt as well, which is we're in the Slate Belt, which is sometimes thought of as a small community that maybe needs a little help at times and a little bit economically distressed. But I think some of these the craft beverage industry has really brought a lot of tourists and business to the Slate Belt, and which I think is great.
And certainly that's a good thing for the Slate Belt, but you are just not in the Slate Belt, right? You're a place up in Stroudsburg, and you're also in Easton as well?
Yeah, that's right. We have a small shop in downtown Stroudsburg on Courthouse Square, which is about a block off of Main Street. And we also are in the Easton Public Market. We have a little bar down there and near the back parking lot. So we're in Easton, Stroudsburg, and Bangor.
And people can also find you at various farmers markets?
Yes, so we are at the Easton Farmers Market. We participate occasionally in the Monroe Market just from our store, which is right outside the market. And we're also in a lot of grocery stores in the Lehigh Valley, a lot of Giant and Weiss and things like that. So we are everywhere. So if you don't want to travel up to Bangor, you can always just grab a bottle at one of our bottle shops or in the grocery stores.
And I imagine those farmers markets are a good fit in terms of the complementary products that are there, other things that come from the earth. I mean, you are an agricultural product, but it gives probably you additional opportunity for exposure where people might not be traveling into a wine store.
Yeah, definitely. And it is nice to be able to pair with some of the other vendors. In Easton, it's a producer's market. So the only way that you can be a part of the market is if you produce what you're selling. So we grow it and we make it, and it's a lot of people are really interested in that. And we can, you know, pair our wines with the cheese person who's right next to us, or, you know, the chocolate person who's in the Easton Public Market. So it's a lot of opportunities for cross promotion and just highlighting the fact that we are, you know, farm to table. And if you want to know where your food comes from, you can see it and see where it's made, and you can do the same thing with your wine.
Well, in fact, we've had JP from Chaco Diem on the show here, and you guys are right next to each other in the market, so it's a little like built-in tasting, right?
Yes, exactly. I just saw him the other day. He was suggesting making chocolate shots so we can put wine in them. I said, that's a pretty good idea.
That's how innovation happens, right?
Yeah.
And we have like another minute left, so give me an idea of what's happening with Tolino in the coming years here. Are you kind of keeping the status quo, or are there other things coming up that we should be looking for?
So we're always looking to grow, and we may add another location in a different town if some opportunity comes up. But we're also looking to kind of expand our area for indoor seating. So that will be the next thing that we do. And we have a license to make beer, so we may be having some of our own beer for sale on, like, for on-site consumption as well. So those are the top things that are coming up for us.
Well, looking forward to 2021 and beyond at Tolino. Thank you for joining us here at WDIY.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm Mike Dravenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.